Spotlights pierce a starry night sky, illuminating the clouds and sweeping a towering edifice in the form of the words, 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company. Titles in white letters swirl hazily. 20th Century Fox presents a 1013 production. Trees are silhouetted against the silver disk of the rising moon. A title reads, The X-Files, I Want to Believe. A circle surrounds the X. At night, beneath power lines, snow is piled high on either side of a narrow woodland track. A readout displays Somerset, West Virginia, 10:23 p.m., as a car, with its headlights on, heads down the icy road. The woman driving concentrates behind the wheel. A team in military-style boots moves across the snow, probing the surface with poles. The woman turns the small car into the snowy driveway of a house and into the garage. The barking dog paws at the slats of a blind. The team moving across the sunlit snow also have dogs with them. The long line keeps probing the snow. The men's jackets bear the FBI logo. They're moving across a flat area with trees and mountains ahead of them. The dog handlers are spread out just ahead of the men with poles, a chopper circling above them. The team appear as coloured shapes on an infrared screen in the chopper. Ahead of them is a tall man with long grey hair in a dark overcoat and glasses. In her garage, the woman switches off the car's headlights. She wears a metal bracelet on her right wrist. A shadowy figure passes behind the car.
Get around!
Hold the line, gentlemen! Look left, look right! Hold the line!
The grey-haired man scans the snowy ground.
It's here. It's here.
The driver goes to close her garage door, then stops, noticing someone's breath vaporizing in the cold night air just outside. Looking down, she sees a footprint in the snow. The grey-haired man jogs ahead of the team.
Let him go! Let him go! Let him go!
The woman steadies her breathing and reaches for a spiked garden hoe hanging on the wall of the garage. Eyes wide, she edges forward. A figure steps out in front of her, and she brings the hoe down on his face, the intruder raising his arms to defend himself. As he examines his bloody hand, a second man appears.
Let him go! Let him go!
The grey-haired man is getting ahead of the FBI agents. The woman flees back into the garage and out of a side door, pursued by the intruders. She sprints away from the house and into the trees. The woman is tackled as the grey-haired man falls to his knees and starts to dig in the snow. He digs frantically, helped by a female agent, as the others form a circle around them. He stops digging and stares into the hole. As the agents eye each other apprehensively, the hole is widened and a piece of black plastic is lifted, revealing a severed arm. The hand bears a deep line of cuts identical to those on the intruder's hand from the garden hoe. A readout displays Our Lady of Sorrows Hospital, 8:25 a.m.
I've gone over the charts you've sent and consulted another pediatric neurologist who works with me here. We're alarmed by two things.
The deficiency in lipid metabolism and the severely diminished enzyme output.
Right. That's exactly right.
Both indicate lysosomal storage illness.
You're the boy's primary physician, Dr.
Scully. Dana Scully.
And you tested his lysosome function.
I think you have all my results there, Doctor. My fear is that it's a type 2 degenerative brain disease like Sandoff disease, that his enzymes aren't clearing the lipids from his brain, causing atrophy.
If you suspect Sandoff disease, I test the boy's levels of hexosaminidase.
I've done that. What I'm looking for here, Doctor, is a course of treatment.
There is no treatment for Sandoff. But if there were, I'm sure you'd tell me.
As the woman glares from the TV screen in the hearing room, red-haired Scully's eyes fill with sadness, and she nods, looking round at the priest watching her closely from across the room. She walks down a hospital corridor past veiled nuns and sees a couple pushing a young boy out of a room in a wheelchair. She sighs and approaches them. She forces a grin as the lad smiles up at her.
Hi, Christian. How are you feeling?
Okay, Dr. Scully. How are you?
Me? Well, I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
A tear rolls down Christian's cheek.
You got some outside opinions?
Yes. We're going to do some more tests.
Dana Scully? Dr. Scully, I'm looking for Fox Mulder.
Excuse me.
She stares at the agent from the snowfield.
Special Agent Drummy, what do you
have? I can guess who you're with.
The FBI urgently needs to speak with Fox Mulder.
I don't work with Fox Mulder any longer. I don't work with the FBI.
But if you could contact him, it might just save the life of an FBI agent.
She stares at him. Later, she drives her silver car down a country road lined with occasional piles of unthawed snow and turns into a lane blocked by a metal mesh gate with spikes along the top. She opens the gate and continues up the narrow track towards a house standing on its own, nestled between copses of evergreens. She opens the door and walks in. The living room is cozy but cluttered, with a bottle and glasses on the table and a bowl of nuts on the coffee table. She puts down her briefcase, takes off her gloves, and undoes her coat. She peers into a room with press cuttings all over the walls.
What's up, Doc?
You've become awfully trusting, Mulder, for a man wanted by the FBI.
Eyes in the back of my head, Scully. Auf Ein or Wellenlang, as the Germans say. It's a precognitive state often confused with simple human intuition in which the brain perceives the deep logic underlying transitory human existence, unaided by the conscious mind, materializing much as you did just now. Though if you'd actually materialized, you'd be rapidly dematerializing. But who believes that crap anymore?
Well, they do at the FBI, apparently. I had a visitor today, Mulder. The FBI wants your help finding a missing agent.
Well, I hope you told them to go screw themselves.
They say all is forgiven. That they'll drop all charges against you if you come in and help them solve this case.
The FBI will forgive me? They put me on trial on bogus charges and tried to discredit a decade of my work. They should be asking me for my forgiveness, Scully.
I think they are, desperately.
How can I possibly help these people?
Someone's come forward with some promising evidence. A psychic, he claims.
Oh. It's a trick, Scully. Smoke me out.
Well, if the FBI wanted to get you, I have no doubt that they could. I think they've just been happy to have you out of their hair.
Well, good, because I'm just as happy having them out of mine.
A young agent's life is at stake. Mulder, I know I don't have to say this, but it could have been you once, or me. You know, the truth is, I worry about you and the effects of long-term isolation.
I'm fine here. I'm happy as a clam.
They maintain eye contact. A scraggly bearded Mulder nibbles a nut. Scully glances up at the ceiling, where dozens of pencils are embedded point first in the polystyrene tiles.
I'll tell them your answer.
Mulder stares after her. On the wall is a poster bearing the words, "I want to believe." Amid the cuttings on the back of the door is a photo of a young girl with dark hair.
Okay, I'll go. Under one condition.
Scully sighs in familiar exasperation. They climb aboard a waiting chopper, Mulder holding the door for her as she climbs in next to the pilot before letting himself in the back. The machine lifts off and away from the house. Flying over a nighttime city, a readout displays Washington, D.C., 9:24 p.m. The Capitol building and the tall needle of the Washington Monument are brightly illuminated. They come into land at a rooftop helipad. A solitary figure is waiting for them as Scully hangs up her headphones and Mulder follows her out of the chopper.
Thanks for the lift.
Don't thank me. I didn't send it.
They glance at each other as Agent Drummy leaves the way. They emerge from a lift, still following their frowning escort. Agents stare at them as they walk down a hallway and arrive at a closed door.
Wait here.
Drummy swipes his ID card through a reader by the door and enters. A female agent stares at Mulder as she walks past. Mulder and Scully look uncomfortable, then glance at a photo of George W. Bush on the wall. And one of J. Edgar Hoover. They turn and look at each other.
Come in.
They walk into a bustling conference room full of agents, many in shirt sleeves. The dark-haired female agent from the Snowfield greets the new arrivals.
Thanks for making this happen. I'm Special Agent in Charge Whitney.
Dana Scully.
Fox Mulder, I believe. I know this is awkward, but welcome back. My team and I appreciate your trust.
Well, trust being what it is, what if I can't help you? Or your agent turns up dead?
Past is the past. I know your work on X-Files cases here and believe you may be the best chance Monica Bannon has now.
How long has she been missing?
Since Sunday evening. Almost 3 days.
I know you know this, but after 72 hours, there's slim chance that she's still alive.
We have slim reason to believe she is. But so far, we've got no evidence to the contrary, and the facts give us hope. Soon after she goes missing, we find this, a severed arm.
Where?
About 10 miles from her home.
I don't understand. It's a man's arm.
It's a match for evidence found at or near the crime scene. Blood or tissue?
Blood. Found in her garage and on the tool that matches the wound.
I take it you were led to it.
Like a needle in a haystack.
By someone claiming psychic powers.
Joseph Fitzpatrick Chrisman.
And you think he's full of shit?
What makes you say that?
Psychic.
Father Joe
Father.
Was...
Father? He was a priest?
Catholic. He cold called 6 hours after Monica Bannon's reported missing, claiming a vision of her, a psychic connection.
And he tells you she's alive?
That's right.
Have you found any other connection?
To Monica Bannon?
No, that's why I sent for you. I need to know we're not wasting time.
He's a religious man, clearly, educated man. He took right action, said nothing to cast doubt upon himself, has no material connection to the crime. You are wasting time, only it's mine and your agent's.
There's a question of credibility.
If you have no reason to doubt the man, why doubt the man's visions?
He didn't lead us to Monica Bannon. He gave us the guy's bloody arm in the snow.
This is not an exact science. If it were me, I'd be on the guy 24/7. I'd be in bed with him kissing his holy ass.
The agents look uncomfortable.
Father Joe's a convicted pedophile.
Mulder tries to hide his own discomfort.
Maybe I'd stay out of bed with him.
2 4-tracks arrive in a snowy nighttime town. A readout displays Richmond, Virginia, 1:01 a.m. Scully follows Whitney out of the car.
What is this? Dorms for habitual sex offenders.
Dorms?
They manage the complex and police themselves. Father Joe lives here voluntarily with his roommate.
Just avoid the activities room.
The two women glare at him as Mulder grins. A man steps away from his frying pan and answers the door.
Joe?
Tell him to come in.
The agents enter as Joe's roommate steps nervously to one side. In the small apartment, the music is coming from a black and white TV. There's an empty double bed. And in another room, Father Joe, holding rosary beads, is finishing his prayers.
Father Joe?
The tall figure with long grey hair wearing a dressing gown stands up. Scully stares.
Excuse the mess, I haven't been sleeping.
Father Joe, this is Fox Mulder.
Okay.
You'd like to ask some questions.
Actually, I'd like to ask something. What was it you were praying for in there, sir?
For the salvation of my immortal soul.
And do you think God hears your prayers?
Do you think he hears yours?
I didn't bugger 37 altar boys.
Oh. That's a colorful way of putting it.
I have another word if you'd like.
I'm sure you do.
I have to believe he does hear me. Or why would he send these visions?
Maybe it's not God doing the sending.
You call them visions. You see them?
In what you might call my mind's eye.
What do you see?
Joe, sitting on the bed, reaches for a cigarette.
I see the poor girl being assaulted. I see her putting up a fight. I hear dogs barking.
Where?
Can't tell.
But you see her alive?
No, but I feel that she is.
Can you show us how you do it?
Joe places his cigarette in an ashtray, and as the agents exchange looks, closes his eyes and concentrates.
I don't know that I can do this right now. Maybe it'd be better if she wasn't here.
He indicates Scully.
Maybe what you see is a way to try and make people forget what it is that you really are.
Joe remains expressionless as she walks out. Mulder stares at him intently. Scully's outside the apartment on the walkway, reading a dossier, as Joe's roommate emerges. Scully stares at him, and he eyes her shiftily as he makes his way downstairs. A hand touches her shoulder.
Jesus, Mulder.
So much for kissing his holy ass.
I'm sorry. I've been too long away from this business. Not long enough.
No, you were good in there. All I had were questions. But you pushed them, you challenged them. Like old times.
Yeah, well, he's a creep and a liar. He knows who did this, and they're supplying him with information. I mean, look where he lives. And his arm they found? This wasn't severed in any fight. It was cut cleanly, chopped off. And tell me how he's been able to lead them straight to it and not even muster a guess as to where the victim is? And two things you're going to find in the next 24 hours. A dead agent, and that this guy, Father Joe, is a big fat fraud.
You could be right, Scully. You could be right. What if you're wrong?
In the apartment, Joe is putting on his coat and scarf.
What are you doing?
I'm going to take him for a ride. See just how psychic this Father Joe really is.
She eyes him incredulously.
Yeah, well, it's been fun.
Scully, nobody's going to make you sit next to him.
Thanks, but I've already been taken for a ride. Anyway, he doesn't want me there.
He follows her downstairs.
I want you here.
This isn't my life anymore, Mulder. I'm done chasing monsters in the dark. I think you've done all they've asked of you here, too. You know, no one says you have to stay here.
These people need my help. And I could really use yours.
She gives a small shake of her head, stares at him, and glances at the dossier. She takes it out of his hand and walks towards the car. Against the background of the snowy woodland road, a readout displays Somerset, West Virginia, 5.02 a.m. The FBI four tracks head down the road. Joe, sitting next to Mulder, wakes up as the vehicle hits a bump.
Are we getting warm?
You tell us.
I don't know. I have a clue where we are.
That's all right. Everybody works differently.
Who are you, the good cop?
I'm the non-cop.
He hands Joe Monica Bannon's FBI photo ID card.
I don't know this girl.
This agent Bannon of yours?
I haven't a clue the connection.
There's always something.
however small.
Who made you the expert?
I once investigated a series of cases involving unexplained phenomena for the FBI.
So you believe in these sort of things?
Let's just say I want to believe.
And his sister was abducted by E.T.
Is that true?
It was a long time ago.
She's dead, isn't she? Your sister.
Mulder looks thoughtfully at Joe, then lowers his eyes. He looks at Monica Bannon's picture and frowns. Whitney glances at him.
This is where she was taken. Your agent. This is where she was attacked.
I want him to see the crime scene.
They pull into a driveway and stop the cars. Joe strides, brow furrowed, towards the garage, stops, and looks around.
No, this isn't right. You brought me to the wrong house.
As Joe strides away, Mulder raises his eyebrows.
Pulled that right out of his ass.
He looks challengingly at Drummy, who frowns and walks off. Joe crosses the road and approaches the garage of the house opposite. There's yellow police tape across the entrance. He lifts the tape and enters the garage, followed by Mulder and the agents. Whitney signals for Drummy to follow him.
There were news crews out here covering the scene. Pictures of the neighborhood. Yeah. They recognized it all from TV.
Yeah, but why?
Why?
Why do it? Why go to such great lengths to create such an elaborate fiction?
Expiation. Forgiveness of his sins. He's written dozens of letters to the Vatican pleading re-engagement with the church.
Rather odd way to impress the Holy See.
Voice of God speaking through a man. I think that's been a winner a few times.
So you think he's guilty too, huh?
We have to consider him a suspect.
But you found no connection to the crime.
Don't think my guys have stopped looking, and they think they're going to find one.
Yeah, but you don't, or I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I'm not the most popular girl at the FBI right now for calling you in, believe me.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly Miss Popularity at the FBI myself.
But you've dealt with psychics before. Luther Lee Boggs, Clyde Bruckman, Gerald Schnauz. I went through those cases, and that work was extremely impressive.
Yeah, well, I'm only half the team.
But it's your insights I need.
He glances at her as she looks at him hopefully. Out in the snow, Joe sinks to his knees, and they all rush over to him.
She ran away. She tried to escape. There were two men. But she couldn't. He pushed her down. It was here. It was right here. And then they put her in the back.
Where?
In the car. No. It was a truck. A truck with something on it.
We have to find her.
She's in pain. Great, great pain.
Tell me where.
I don't know. I can't see.
We need to find her.
I can't see.
Drummy shrugs dismissively and eyes Mulder.
Because he's pulling it out of his ass.
He walks off. Mulder and Whitney exchange glances and look down at the weeping Joe.
Father Joe?
Blood is dripping onto the snow. It's coming from Joe's eyes. At the hospital, Scully goes to visit young Christian.
Hi, Christian. You're looking very bright-eyed this morning.
I was thinking.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
How I'm going to get out of here.
Well, you know, I'm thinking exactly the same thing.
Can I get out of here soon?
What's wrong? Has something scared you?
The way the man is looking at me.
What man?
Down the hallway, a man is standing looking towards Christian's room.
Don't be afraid.
Scully strides off towards the guy. He's looking through a file.
I was just looking for those.
I wanted to go over them myself and the results of the new tests that you ordered.
That isn't really your purview, Father. It's his primary physician's.
It is in my purview to make sure that all my physicians are making the right choices for their patients and for the hospital.
Can I have the test results, please?
We are here to heal the sick, not prolong the ordeal of the dying. There are other, better facilities for the boy.
Father Ibarra, the priest from the hearing, looks towards the noise. Scully hurries away from him. At a swimming pool, a man swims on his back and a young woman jumps in. She walks away from the side, then turns and walks back, taking off her watch and putting on a pair of goggles. She's watched from below the surface by a rough-looking guy, sitting submerged at the edge of the pool. He stares at her young body as she grabs a float and swims off. He raises his eyes above the surface of the water and grins unpleasantly. The sign outside the pool reads, McLaren Natatorium. Wearing a coat and woolen mittens, the young woman exits the building. She walks to her car and puts her bag in the boot. She jumps at the engine's roar and stares as a snowplow moves off from a parking space near her car. She turns off a wet main road and onto an icy side road, windscreen wipers working against the slowly falling snow.
Settle down and stop moving, go to the sky,
she accelerates to overtake the slow-moving pickup with the snowplow on the front. As she leans to get a glimpse of the driver, he accelerates and moves over, trying to force her off the road. Crashes through a wall of snow at the side of the road and slams into a hay bale in a snow-covered field. The pickup stops, then reverses. With a welt across her nose and cheek, she blearily opens her eyes and watches as her assailant gets out of his cab and gets a large bag off the back of his truck before heading towards her car. Climbs over the car's bonnet and drops down beside her window.
I'm okay.
It's the grinning guy from the pool. He punches through the window. Her tires spin as she vainly tries to reverse away. He drags her body across the snow. Scully's in bed, wide awake.
I can feel you thinking.
I'm sorry, I can't sleep.
Lying next to her, Mulder raises himself up.
Actually, I have a little something for that.
Just a little something?
Thank you. What's the matter?
I have a patient, a young boy with a rare brain disease. And he's very, very sick.
Why haven't you told me about this before?
I thought there was something I could do.
There's not?
Well, there's radical treatments, but nobody wants to talk about those. Even the experts say there's nothing to be done. Nothing but let him die. So I'm lying here cursing God for all his cruelties.
And do you think God is losing any sleep?
Why bring a kid into the world just to make him suffer? I don't know, Mulder. I've got such a connection to this boy.
How old is he?
You think it's because of William?
I think our son left us both with an emptiness that can't be filled. Just go to sleep. Let me curse God for a while.
Thank you.
Scratchy beard.
She smiles, and they settle back down to sleep.
Oh. Mm. There was something weird on the toxicology report of the severed arm.
What?
I looked over the FBI evidence reports again. And in the tissue, there were traces of a drug that's commonly given to patients being treated with radiation. Mm. And also traces of a drug called azepromidine.
Why is that weird?
Azepromazine's an animal tranquilizer.
As she closes her eyes, Mulder sits up.
Now I can't sleep.
Mulder.
What is animal tranquilizer doing in the tissue sample of a man's severed arm?
I can't even begin to speculate.
He said he heard barking dogs.
Who?
Father Joe.
Mulder, what are you doing?
Is it a tranquilizer that you might give a dog?
He's a phony, Mulder. He pulls these so-called visions out of thin air, and now he's got you straining to connect them.
When I see a man cry tears of blood at a crime scene he recognizes without ever having visited, I need to go out on a limb, you know what I'm saying?
Tears of blood?
Yeah, some trick, huh? How do you fake that?
He rubs shaving foam into his beard. Scully goes to answer her phone.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Scully?
Yes?
I have Dakota Whitney for you.
Can you hold on a second? I'm sorry to call at this hour. Has there been a break?
They find her?
We're pursuing another lead.
The same source?
Same source, new news.
It's here. Turn up ahead, the bomb.
A readout displays 3 hours later.
No.
Whitney stares as clean-shaven Mulder strides up.
What'd you do?
She indicates a shaving cut on his cheek.
You said there was news.
The news is our psychic led us to the exact same site he led us to before.
Mulder hurries away, followed by Scully. Puzzled, Whitney follows them.
You're gonna find it.
That's what she keeps saying.
You're gonna find a body.
You keep telling us she's alive.
She is.
We could do this all night. These guys are all running on empty.
I'm sorry for bringing you out here.
Hey! Let's go, fellas! Bring it in! Let's go! Bring it in, gentlemen! Time to go home!
Tell me. Right, tell me what you see.
I see a face. I see eyes staring out.
Who? Who is it?
It's unclear. Like through dirty glass. It's out there. I know it.
Joe drops his cigarette in the snow and walks pensively away.
Scully, what does he mean, like through dirty glass?
Mulder.
What?
Stop.
Okay, just feel free to give up like everybody else.
This is not my job anymore, Mulder.
No, that's right. You're just like my booking agent now, right?
You're right. This is my fault.
What do you mean it's your fault?
For getting you involved in this.
No. It was the right thing to do, Scully.
This is not about finding an FBI agent. This is about you trying to save your sister.
He turns abruptly, his features hard.
My sister is dead.
It hasn't stopped you from looking for her. Mulder, I have been through this too many years with you. Believing you can save her. You cannot save her. Not now and not ever.
He watches Joe walking across the snow towards the dark tree line. He and Scully both look at each other imploringly.
I need those men back!
Whitney, looking thoroughly unimpressed, walks back towards them, followed by Drummy and the others.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to ignore you.
The FBI team trudge after Mulder and Scully, following Joe towards the tree line. Joe approaches a clearing in the forest.
This is it! Here it is!
He drops to his knees and starts to dig in the snow with his hands.
This is it!
Mulder joins in. Scully watches from a distance as the agents arrive.
We need shovels.
The whole team gets involved, watched by Mulder and Joe.
Solid ice.
Mulder scrapes away the last layer of snow.
Joe, it's dirty glass.
Drummy frowns at him in puzzled annoyance.
Flashlight?
On his knees, Mulder scoops away armfuls of snow. They all shine their flashlights down on the ice. Beneath the dirty glass of the ice is a woman's face, her mouth gaping open in death.
You're gonna need resources.
Whitney nods, Drummy and Scully stare.
We need equipment, concrete saws, and a backhoe.
You two get on the line. You two come with me.
Scully watches as Mulder walks off, and agents hurry to fetch the necessary equipment. Joe's standing behind her. She whirls in alarm.
Don't give up.
His intense gaze follows her as she walks away. The snow-plowed truck cruises down a small nighttime road, headlights blazing. The shadowy driver steers off the road. He stops, gets out, and opens a gate in a high chain-link fence. There are cages containing dogs, and one containing a woman. Two men crouch down in front of her wooden kennel.
I'm sorry I hit your truck. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to hit your truck. I didn't mean to... Wait.
She's being moved. Through a small slit, she sees a room like an operating theater.
What is this place? Who are you?
Someone in surgical gloves prepares a hypodermic. Three men are in discussion. Another lies on an operating table under a green surgical shroud. The man's eyes open and focus on the trapped woman.
Please, just get me out of here. Get up.
He's got long parallel wounds down his face. Tears of blood fill his eyes. The readout displays 8:08 a.m.
I think we can resolve then, in good conscience and without objection, to relocate the patient to a facility suited for and humane to his condition.
Scully enters the hospital conference room.
As you and I discussed, Dr. Scully, I was just informing the staff and doctors of the hospital's decision on Christian Fearon.
I'm sorry, what decision?
To relocate the patient to a hospice who will manage his palliative care.
That was a discussion, not a decision.
Well, it's been discussed here at length with no objection from your colleagues.
I have an objection.
You have, Dr. Scully, a patient with an untreatable condition. Now, that's very sad and unfortunate. Nobody disagrees with that.
But he's my patient.
And unless you've come here today with a cure for Sandhoff disease, we all ask that you let the boy go in peace.
The priest meets her glare, and she weakens.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to wrap up so we can get on to the day's good work. We have the final matter of a patient in intensive care, Dr. Willer's patient, I believe, admitted after suffering myocardial infarction during surgery.
There is a treatment.
The matter is resolved, Dr. Scully.
No, it's not. The disease can be treated with intrathecal stem cell therapy.
You're not serious. Don't put the boy through hell.
Would you do it if it was your son?
It's not her son, and he's not yours.
And it's not a decision for hospital administration. It's his doctor's. If you would like to challenge that, you can take the matter up with a higher authority.
I have taken it up with the highest authority, Dr. Scully. As should you.
She breaks eye contact and walks out. A readout displays Quantico, Virginia, 10:20 a.m. Scientists are working on a large block of ice. Mulder dials a number on his phone. On a desk is a photo of Monica Bannon.
Come on, pick up.
She's shaking hands with a man in a suit.
Come on.
Mulder clocks her metal bracelet.
Come on, answer.
Scully Googles stem cell therapy as her cell phone vibrates.
This is Dana Scully. Please leave a message.
Hey, Scully, it's me. I keep leaving you messages. Here's what I want to tell you. That woman's head in the ice, it's not the agents, not Monica Bannon's. We don't know who she is or why she's there, but so far we've pulled 11 discrete human limbs from the ice, and we're not even done yet.
Each one a clean cut, too. An exact match to the previous amputation you noted, Scully. It looks like someone's been dumping body parts in the ice there for months, possibly years. And there seems to be no pattern to the limbs. Men and women, all with healthy, undiseased tissue, according to forensics. Which suggests to me that they are victims. But here's the thing. What I need you to know.
You found more traces of your animal tranquilizer. Acepromazine, I don't know what the hell it means, but I'm hoping you can make sense of it.
Whitney approaches him.
Anything?
No, I can't reach her, but this is going to make sense. This is a break. I'm feeling it.
Mm-hmm. You're feeling it, Father Joe's feeling it. All I'm feeling is my head spinning.
No, this is a serial case you've uncovered here. You're going to solve a dozen murders here.
Yes, but I'm no closer to finding my agent.
No, we're going to find her. I know it.
Well, she may have to stand in line.
I see a woman's face. Another woman. Taken from a car. She's been held in a box, I think.
She with Monica Bannon?
I don't know.
Is it the same man that took her?
I think so. Yes. It's the same man.
You see this? Or are you just telling these people what they want to hear?
No.
No, you don't see it.
No, it's the same man.
Their eyes meet, Mulder weighing Joe up.
I want a car ready.
To go where?
I don't know yet.
I don't believe this.
That's been your problem from the start.
I can get you a car.
And a list of missing persons in the greater area over the last 48 to 72 hours.
A readout displays Somerset, West Virginia, 2:08 p.m. Police officers are clearing snow away from the car crashed into a hay bale. FBI 4x4s arrive, and Whitney leads the way to the scene.
Hi.
Whitney gets a document from the senior cop as Drummy looks into the car and Mulder walks up.
Cheryl Cunningham, 34. Never made it to work last night. No show at home either.
There's no blood on the airbags. Driver's side window knocked out, keys in the ignition. Survivor will crash with a seatbelt. She sets off, takes a shortcut, gets tired, sits down, falls asleep. Happens all the time.
Pretty hard left turn for such a long straight stretch of country road, don't you think? But why settle for my opinion?
Joe walks up to the car and gets into the driver's seat. He looks at the deflated airbag and around the car's interior, then concentrates. Whitney and Drummy exchange glances, and Mulder waits patiently.
I'm sorry, I'm not getting anything.
What a surprise. What a surprise.
As Joe walks away, Drummy and Whitney look annoyed. Mulder crouches by the car, looking disappointed.
I think we're done with Father Joe.
Yeah.
Whoa, whoa.
Mulder spots a metal bracelet in the snow.
Not quite finished.
What is that?
It's a medical ID bracelet.
I noticed you're missing Agent World 1-2.
For what?
What are you thinking?
Let's pop the trunk.
This isn't gonna do her much good.
It's a gym bag. It's a bathing suit. It's frozen stiff.
Whitney sniffs the frozen garment.
Chlorine.
Where's the nearest public pool?
The convoy heads off through the small town and arrives at the natatorium. They head inside, where an older man is sitting alone at reception.
Hi. We're hoping you can help us.
Would you all like lockers?
No, we're with the FBI. We'd like to show you a photo, sir, if you don't mind.
Why would I mind?
Do you know this person?
Let me see. These young people look so much the same.
Do you have a sign-in register?
Yes, I keep one every day.
I'd like to see yesterday's.
I threw yesterday's away.
Mulder heads for the changing rooms.
Excuse me, sir. Doesn't he know that's the woman's sign?
At the hospital, Christian is wheeled on a trolley.
Hi, Christian. You've got a whole bunch of people taking really good care of you today, okay? What?
Now you look scared.
Dressed in surgical scrubs, Scully tries to smile nonchalantly, but can't hide her concern. She leaves the room as the surgical team prepares. She watches from an adjacent room as Christian is made ready for his procedure and equipment is checked. Unconscious, the boy is on a ventilator as the surgeons drill into his skull to access his brain. Progress is monitored on a screen, showing a scanned cross-section of Christian's head. A long, fine tube with a syringe at one end is prepared and passed to Scully. She takes the tube which will deliver the stem cells and carefully inserts it into the clamp, which will guide the tube to deliver the dose with millimetric accuracy directly into Christian's brain. Scully, watching her monitors, guides the tube with infinite care, then gently presses the plunger. Christian twitches slightly, but remains unconscious. The liquid in the syringe is gently forced down the tube. Later, Scully writes up her notes.
People say I went underground.
I'm sorry, Mulder. I had to keep my focus here.
It's the boy, isn't it? I thought there was nothing to be done.
I'm taking a big chance on something. On a radical and extremely painful new procedure.
Last night you said that wasn't an option.
It wasn't. Last night.
And what changed your mind?
Too emotional to answer, she gets up and moves away from him. He considers his response.
When will you know if it's working?
There's a series of these procedures, and we won't know until they're all done.
He nods supportively.
But that's not what you came to talk about.
There's another woman missing. She's given us something to go on. She and the missing agent swam at the same pool. We found that the agent kept a locker there. We think they were stalked there. Both women wore a medical ID bracelet, and they both had the same rare blood type, AB negative.
Organs harvested for transplant. That's how they were targeted. Donors and recipients need matched types. Someone using that pool knows that.
Black market. Somebody filling orders.
Well, they have access. Recipients, hospitals.
That's your world, Scully. Your knowledge of it will save time, and time is our enemy.
You can start with the transporters. Call the Richmond DA.
No. I need you on this with me.
No, Mulder.
Yeah, you asked for me to get involved, Scully. Now I'm asking for you to stay involved.
Mulder... You've helped them already. You broke the case for them. Why don't you just let the FBI pursue it?
We're so close now.
And I'm asking you to let it go.
It's not that simple.
No, it's complicated.
What is that supposed to mean?
Something that I knew would happen, that I've been afraid of, that I haven't had to face until now.
What? Just say it.
I'm a doctor, Mulder. That's not my life anymore.
I know that.
You're not understanding me. I can't look into the darkness with you anymore, Mulder. I cannot stand what it does to you or to me.
I'm fine with it, Scully. I'm actually okay. I'm good.
Yeah, that's what scares me.
Well, where else would you have me look if you want me to find these women alive?
I'm asking you to look at yourself.
Why? I don't think I'm the one who's changed.
We're not FBI anymore, Mulder. We are two people who come home at night to a home now. I don't want that darkness in my home.
Scully, this is who I am. It's who I've always been. This is who I was before I met you. It's what I do. It's everything I know.
Write it down. Put it in a book.
Are you asking me to give up?
No. I can't tell you to do that, Mulder. But I can tell you that I won't be coming home.
Scully.
Mulder, I've got my own battles to fight.
Don't do this.
Please don't argue with me.
Don't do this now.
I don't know what else to do.
He gazes at her, then looks around, searching for words. At a loss, he gives a small shake of his head.
Good luck, then.
He walks past her and out of the room.
You too.
Scully walks down the hospital's main stairs beneath a huge stained glass window of the Virgin Mary.
Dr. Scully.
We'd like to speak with you, if we may. About Christian.
Have you been in to see him? Yes, he was sleeping. But we've
changed our minds about going forward with this new treatment.
But you don't even know if it's working yet.
We think that Christian's been through enough.
We want to put our faith in God now. I see. It's nothing against you. No. If you were a mother, you'd understand. Have you spoken to Father Ybarra?
Yes. But the decision is ours.
What if it did work? What if we found we'd made the wrong choice by stopping? You're saying you can save my son? I'm saying I don't want to give up now.
A readout displays Manor's Colonial Hospital, 5:01 p.m.
But lo and behold, and we're about to hit the tarmac, and all of a sudden, the plane gears up, and we're back up in the air. I say, honey, isn't this fantastic? We're going to die together. Turns out there was a plane parked in the tarmac, and we missed colliding with it by seconds. But we were in love, and it was romantic.
In an operating room, a guy zips up a bag labeled human organ for transplant and steps out into the corridor.
Sir? Excuse me, sir. Can we talk with you a minute?
I'm transporting vital organ.
That's what we'd like to talk to you about.
This is my job. I move very quickly. I don't have much time.
Please, sir, step over here. My name is Robert Cole. I'm with the District Attorney's Office in Richmond. May I see your paperwork and license?
I have green card.
What are you transporting?
Human liver for transplantation.
Paperwork and license, please. And where are you delivering it?
Willows Memorial Hospital. They're expecting it. Their patient wait for it.
Have you ever procured or delivered an organ outside of normal or lawful channels?
The guy narrows his eyes and stares at the DA man.
No.
You're an employee with this company. How would your employer answer this question?
He's sick. Has cancer.
That's not what I asked you.
Am I under some kind of suspicion?
Sitting on his bed, long hair tied back, Joe looks around, disturbed by the knocking. In his dressing gown, he gets up and heads for the front door. He looks around. Scully's standing back from the door, her hands on her hips.
A vision, if ever I had one.
May I speak with you?
Would you like to come in?
She looks in shock as she walks towards him, and he ushers her into the apartment.
Make yourself comfortable.
I won't be staying long.
Have you come here by yourself?
Yes.
Sit. Please, answers.
She looks quite distraught as she sits on the edge of the bed. He picks up the Bible he was reading and sits next to her.
Now, you came to ask something. We're alone, free to speak in confidence.
She looks around in alarm at the noise, then tries to compose herself.
You said something to me the other night in the snow.
Yes, I said don't give up.
I need to know why you said that.
I haven't the faintest idea. Were you hoping for another answer?
Do you know anything about me?
Other than that you loathe me?
Do you know what it is that I do?
No. I can see you're a woman of faith, but not in the same things as your husband.
He's not my husband.
Do you care to tell me about yourself?
No.
Do you care to offer a confession?
I don't think you're...
What? Any position to judge? And yet you've judged me, haven't you?
You deserve to be judged.
Do you know why we live here? The men who call this vile box of monsters home? Because we hate each other, even as we hate ourselves, for our sickening appetites.
It doesn't make it any less sickening.
And where do they come from, these appetites, these uncontrollable urges of ours?
Not from God.
Not from me. I castrated myself when I was 26. And the visions weren't my idea either. Proverbs 25:2.
What?
God's glory to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings to search out a matter.
Don't you quote scripture to me.
What are you doing here? What are you afraid of?
Don't give up. What was that for?
I don't know.
I don't believe you.
I'm telling you the truth.
They were your words.
I don't know why I said.
You said them to my face.
All I ever wanted was to serve him. All I've ever wanted was to serve God.
You can ask for his pity, but don't expect mine. You can stop the act anytime.
Head bowed, he's shaking uncontrollably.
Look at me.
She lifts up his chin, but his eyes remain closed, and he sinks back on the bed as the fit takes hold. Cheryl looks out through the holes in her box. A man in a white coat approaches, with a tray of food. He holds up the tray so she can see it, then unlocks the box. On a trolley, a pale woman's hand with a metal bracelet on the wrist shakes and is raised feebly. Her body is racked with a fit as the white-coated man tries to soothe her. Cheryl looks out from her box. She pushes open the unlocked door and crawls out, scrambling past the dog cages before falling down a chute. She keeps moving, bursting through a plastic screen and into the snowy air. A guard dog charges towards her. Police are guarding Joe's apartment block as Whitney's car pulls up.
No, they're loading him in now.
What happened?
Thank you. He had a seizure.
Who called you?
No one.
Well, what are you doing here? We need to talk to Father Joe.
Well, that's not going to happen. We've got a suspect.
a Russian emigre working as an organ transporter.
In custody?
No. The Richmond DA questioned him about trafficking black market human organs this afternoon, but he was released. They had no evidence to hold him. We've got a fairly credible witness who says he swam with the women at the pool.
ASAC Whitney?
Excuse me.
What's that got to do with Father Joe?
It's the man and his vision, Scully.
Who?
The suspect, the man in this photo.
Mulder, now you're wasting their time.
Tell me again what you're doing here.
Here's a vision for you. A couple of my guys just had it.
Who's this?
That's our suspect's employer, an old friend of Father Joe's, we just learned. Known him for over 20 years.
Known him how?
That's one of his 37 altar boys. Three guesses who he's married to in the state of Massachusetts. Our suspect.
We got a warrant to search their offices.
They're the pair who attacked Monica Bannon.
It's over.
Hey!
What?
Hey!
Mulder!
He ignores her and runs towards Whitney's car. Scully stares aghast as the car pulls away. The FBI vehicles pull up at a building in town, and the team piles out, including some operatives in body armor.
Why don't you hold up? Let these men do their jobs.
Mulder reluctantly obeys.
Clear this bottom floor.
You were all fooled on this. I wanted to believe it as bad as anyone.
Look, I don't need the sweet talk.
You led us here.
Father Joe led us here.
This is Special Agent Drummy with the FBI. We have warrants to search these offices. Anyone inside, identify yourself and unlock the door now.
I called you in because I thought you could help me with this case because I valued your belief in these phenomena.
Now what do you think?
I think this is a longer conversation.
Down on the floor! Down on the floor! Anybody here I want, down on the floor!
A van pulls up in an alley. Yanka Dakshin, the suspect stopped at the hospital, gets out of a lift. He walks down a corridor, peers into the office being turned over by the FBI, then walks quickly on.
Somebody find the lights.
We were at complete standstill and you pushed us forward, no matter the direction we took.
Mulder looks up as Dakshin exits the building. Their eyes meet.
Hey!
Whitney and Mulder give chase as the man sprints away. Narrowly avoid being flattened by a truck, then dodge cars as the pursuit reaches a busy road, and they follow their quarry, who runs up through the oncoming traffic. He pushes a passerby out of his way. As Drummy's team keep searching the office, the chase leads to a construction site. They charge through the treacherous maze of scaffolding and materials, then into the building. The abductor leading Mulder up an unfinished concrete staircase. He flings a piece of pipe down the stairs to trip Mulder, who has to slow to avoid it.
Wait, which way do they go?
Down that way!
Whitney follows the construction worker's pointing finger. Mulder pauses for breath and looks around. The area is full of shadows and construction paraphernalia. Drummy finds a box containing bloody bags of organs.
Mulder!
Up here!
A shadow passes behind a dust screen, and the chase is back on. Mulder follows Dakshin through the screen, leaps a gap, and scrambles through scaffolding. They climb higher on the scaffold, the street now far below, and arrive on the roof. Brightly lit tower blocks surround the construction site. Mulder spots his quarry starting to climb back down from the roof and hares after him. Drummy steps out of the office building and is puzzled by a red organ transplant bag on the pavement. Dakshin and Mulder continue to climb down the site's steelwork. Trummy prepares to open the bag with latex gloves as Whitney tries to keep up with the chase.
Mulder!
He's coming at you!
Hey!
She raises her pistol as she and Mulder flip through the shadows. Trummy screws up his face in distaste as he opens the bag. Trummy looks up at his fellow agents in disgust as he lifts the lid of the container in the bag.
Fox! Where is he? Do you have him?
No. I lost him.
The box contains a severed head.
I saw him.
Where?
He's in front of her. Before she can raise her gun, he shoves her backwards. She plummets down a shaft, her gun landing next to some sharp lengths of reinforcing wire sticking up from the concrete. Scully walks down a corridor in the hospital towards Mulder. They face each other awkwardly, and she takes his hand.
They're both dead. Monica Bannon and Dakota Whitney.
I heard. I'm sorry.
I thought we were winning, Scully.
I know you did, Mulder.
He removes his hand from hers.
I'm here to see Father Joe. I want to show him these photographs. These men.
You still want to believe him? I think you should know that he's been diagnosed with a terminal illness. He has advanced stage lung cancer.
I just want to be sure.
Then let me ask him.
She takes the roll of photos.
You wouldn't believe. I was thinking of you. I had a vision. You might find interest in it. Of a man speaking a foreign language.
Do you happen to look like this?
Joe puts on his glasses and looks at the pictures.
Yeah, that's the man. How did you know?
We think he's the man who abducted the FBI agent and the second woman that you say you saw, and possibly many more. And we think that he was helped by this man.
She holds up the picture of the former altar boy.
I don't know who that is.
Are you sure?
I'm fairly certain. I don't know him.
I'm fairly certain that you do. And that you've known him since he was a boy.
Joe looks again, his eyes widening in horror.
Oh, no. It can't be true. I don't believe this. He was my connection to the girl. My visions were to save her from him. This is God's work. This is God's work.
Let me ask you one more question, Father Joe. The FBI agent, the first woman that you saw, Monica Bannon, is she still alive?
He closes his eyes and sinks back on his pillows.
I feel her. Yes. She's still alive.
Scully and Mulder exchange an unimpressed look. He walks off. She follows.
Mulder.
That second victim may be alive. Everybody's given up on her, but I'm not going to.
Mulder, do you think I don't understand what I do? This stubbornness of yours is why I fell in love with you.
It's like you said. That's why we can't be together.
He touches her hand, then leaves. Tom Chesson, the wounded former altar boy, lies on the trolley in the illegal organs facility. His breathing is labored.
Nada сейчас!
Закрой рот!
Dakshin examines Tom Chesson's right shoulder.
Сегодня!
Сегодня!
There are deep grooves in his head from the hoe. Technicians approach him. There's an IV line into his left arm. The fingers are fine and tipped with nail polish. A woman's arm. In snowy daylight, Mulder walks out into the tree-lined field near the barn. He looks around pensively. He walks down a track towards a snow-covered cluster of rocks. There's a large hole surrounded by police incident tape where the ice grave was removed. He drives through the town, past a pickup truck and a large flatbed loaded with tree trunks. He pulls into a petrol station. At the pump, he turns round, and a wooden sign above the shop emblazoned with Nutter's Feed catches his eye.
Hey, sorry to bother you.
I'm closed.
No, I just need a moment of your time.
You know, we got some bad weather coming in. You better get where you're going fast. So, what do you need?
Yeah, I was wondering if you carry an animal tranquilizer called Acepromazine.
You got a prescription for it?
No, I don't.
Well, I can't sell it to you then.
Can you tell me if you've ever sold any to this man?
I am never getting out of here.
I'm just...
Not a speed.
Mulder turns around in time to notice the snowplow pickup nosing into the forecourt.
Yeah, I was just closing up and I'm going to pick him up. Yeah, goodbye. Yeah.
The guy emerges from the office to see Dakshin standing at the counter.
What happened to the other guy?
Who?
The guy who was standing right here.
I need to refill this now.
Okay.
Dakshin frowns at the store owner. He pulls out of the petrol station with two large dogs running alongside the pickup. They give up the chase as he pulls away. He passes a side road, from which Mulder emerges and starts to follow him. Pickup takes a winding road up into the trees. Mulder follows at a discreet distance. Mulder gets out his phone and dials, driving one-handed along the narrow, snowbound track. As he crests a rise, concentrating on the phone, the pickup has come to a stop right in front of him. Bounces off the back of the truck and into a snowdrift, the force deploying his airbag. The truck backs up, then rams him. It pushes the car sideways through the snow, the organ trafficker grim-faced at the wheel. Mulder looks around in desperation. Then the car goes over the brow of a steep hill and starts to roll. At the hospital, Scully strides down a corridor, then sits at her desk, hurriedly organizing papers, putting selected documents into a cardboard folder. She looks at a series of photos beneath an article, then frowns and holds the pictures under the desk light in order to see better. Fragments of sentences mention work with laboratory animals, particularly dogs, performed in Russia, and fused at the neck. She stands as she reads, "Survive for periods of several weeks." On her computer screen, a dialogue box shows, "Printer stopped. Please check printer." Brow furrowed, she presses a button on the machine, and an enlarged photo emerges from the mechanism. It's a surgeon, with a dog lying on an operating table. Another shows a dog's severed head, the next a dog with two heads, one grafted on and snarling. She makes a call on her mobile.
Yeah, it's me.
Shh,
I must be busy right now. Leave a message.
Mulder, I just found something in my stem cell research. Experiments being done in Russia on dogs, Mulder. I think that's what your suspects have been doing, only on humans. Those women who've been abducted. You've got to call me.
Mulder, the FBI agent's alive.
Mulder's car is upside down, in the snow, in the freezing night. Chunks of snow are flung aside as Mulder digs himself out. His bloodied head emerges through the hole he's made, and he painfully hauls himself out of a side window, falling back onto the ground as he breaks free. He turns over, kneels, and looks up at the falling snow and the dark rocks above. He gets to his feet and looks at the car, lying beneath a rocky overhang, topped with a thick crust of snow.
FBI Special Agent George Foster speaking. It's for you.
This is Special Agent Drumming.
I've been trying to find you for hours.
I can't reach Mulder.
Is this Dr. Scully?
Yes, it's Dr. Scully.
Well, where is he?
If I knew that, I wouldn't be calling.
Dr. Scully, I'm going to suggest you call the police. This is not an FBI matter.
Listen to me. I need your help.
I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Then let me talk to somebody there with some balls who can.
Lights come on, and from her kennel prison, Cheryl sees a figure approaching. A white-gowned nurse opens the door.
Don't touch me!
She's dragged from the kennel by more white gowns and a gas hypodermic pressed to her neck. The struggling ceases as she loses consciousness. Out in the night, the snowplow truck heads down a track, lights blazing. Stops, the blade drops, and fluid spurts from a ruptured hose. Mulder walks down a road through the snow-swirling night. He comes to a junction, and looking down the narrow track off the road he's on, sees the truck a short distance away. He jogs towards it and opens the door. The driver's gone. He pulls the seat forward and finds a wrench, which he slips under his jacket as he steps away from the vehicle. He walks on down the track, then breaks into a jog. At the transplant facility, Dakshin kneels next to the ex-choir boy on his trolley.
I've taken care of it. I've taken good care. You don't need this one anymore.
A gaunt, white-gowned surgeon prepares an injection for Tom Chesson and pulls down the sheet covering him. There's a line of heavy stitches right round his neck. The surgeon flicks the hypodermic to settle the serum as Cheryl is being immersed in an ice bath. Mulder arrives at the chain-link fence surrounding the facility and looks for a way into the compound. He tugs at the heavy chain securing the gate. The gaunt surgeon's work is reflected in his glasses. He's removing the stitches around Tom Chesson's neck.
Look at me. You're going to live. You're going to have a fine, strong body.
Stuff you up, Bakayo. You have short ear, you.
The surgeon waves Dakshin away In the ice bath, Cheryl's neck is swabbed with iodine. Mulder scales the chain-link fence. Guard dogs tear towards him. He's knocked to the ground by the ferocity of their attack. As he struggles, Dakshin hears the commotion. The snowplow driver rushes out into the snowy night and looks around. The surgeon takes a scalpel to Cheryl's neck as Dakshin hurries to the source of the yelping. A dog lies bleeding in the snow. There's a trail of bloodied patches of snow. A tow truck is lifting Mulder's car. An FBI four-track arrives. Scully gets out and rushes anxiously to the scene. She's approached by a uniformed cop.
Excuse me?
I'm Dana Scully, and that's my car.
Right. I talked to some bigwig down at the FBI. A call from Washington.
Yeah, that's him. Walter Skinner. Is there any indication what happened or any footprints?
Nothing. The snow's pretty heavy. But we did find this. You might want to give it to him. Excuse me.
It's his cell phone. It's got blood on it.
Hey, listen, calm down. Stop and think. He's okay. He's got to be now. He climbed out of there somehow. If he climbed out, he probably climbed up.
Dakshin runs through the compound, following the blood trail. He looks around and walks past the chute that Cheryl tumbled out of, Mulder's hiding inside. Mulder stays still, watching the man's movements. IV tubes are inserted into Cheryl's neck. Machines are started to circulate blood. The IV lines out of and into her neck fill up darkly. Emerging from the chute, Mulder watches as Tom Chesin's head is removed from its temporary body.
Stop! Back off! Back away! Back off! You speak English. Anybody speak English. I want her out of here. I want those tubes out of her neck, and I want her neck sewn up. Do it! Do it!
He stares at the headless body beneath the sheet. In an ice bucket, the head's eyes open. Then the surgeon shoots tranquilizer into Mulder's neck. Dakshin enters and drags Mulder to his feet. The bald Skinner, stern behind his wireframe glasses, drives Scully in the 4x4.
We will find him. Yeah, I know Mulder. He'd get to a phone and call first. He wouldn't do anything crazy.
She shoots him a doubtful look.
Not overly crazy.
Dakshin drags Mulder by the legs down wooden steps out into the snow. Mulder's semi-conscious. There are lights and chains hanging from a ceiling. An axe is embedded in a chopping block, and there's a body lying next to it. In the car, Scully stares out of the window. Then her eyes widen as a thought strikes her.
Wait a minute, back up.
Skinner stops the car, then reverses. Scully gets out. She approaches a row of mailboxes at the roadside.
What is it?
One box bears the numbers 25 and 2, separated by a space.
Proverbs 25, 2.
Dakshin lifts up the body beside the chopping block. An arm lolls, and Mulder looks over groggily. There's a metal bracelet on the wrist. Dakshin swings the axe as Scully opens the mailbox.
Glory of God to hide a thing. I've got it. It's an invoice for medical supplies to a Dr. Yurov Koltov.
It's an address on Dark Tower Road.
They glance around warily.
Listen.
What?
They stand still, turning their heads to gauge the direction of the barking.
Dogs. Dogs.
Still woozy on the ground, Mulder watches as the Russian stuffs body parts into a black plastic sack. He tries feebly to reach the axe. Dakshin grabs the axe handle and removes Mulder's hand. He lifts the blade from the block and lays Mulder's head and shoulders on the chopping surface. Mulder looks up helplessly as the blade is sharpened. Dakshin raises the axe. Scully lays him out with a piece of wood.
The girl, still inside.
She's still in the ice bath. The surgeon starts to cut into her neck.
Show me your hands! Show me your hands! Put the scalpel down!
Put the scalpel down!
Put the scalpel down! Put your goddamn hands! Get over there! God, what have you done?
You want trouble?
What have you done?
As Skinner covers the surgeons with his gun, Scully enters.
Mulder needs warm clothes and fluids.
He indicates the ice bath.
Oh, God.
Cheryl's blood is seeping into the icy water.
I've got work to do here.
Get in!
Skinner herds the white gowns into a kennel as Scully takes off her coat and scrubs up. He pauses to stare at the body in the ice, then goes outside to tend to Mulder, taking off his jacket to use as a blanket.
The girl inside.
Scully's got her. She's in good hands.
Skinner?
Yeah.
Cold.
I got you. I got you.
Skinner wraps him in the coat, then holds him to share his body heat. In daylight, Scully's car is parked outside their countryside home. Mulder cuts out a news headline. FBI arrests modern-day Frankenstein doctor.
What's up, Doc?
Father Joe is dead.
He pauses, then turns to her.
He was clearly a very sick man.
He tears another article from the paper.
Did you see the story? The FBI is claiming Father Joe was an accomplice. Not a word about a psychic connection.
He's dead, Mulder. We'll never know.
I know, Scully, and I can prove it. Father Joe died of lung cancer, right? The same as that man that Dr. Frankenstein tried to give a new body.
Mulder.
What time did you pull those tubes from that woman's neck? What time did you cut off the blood supply to that man's head? That's when Father Joe died. You get me his death certificate, and I'll show it to you, and then I'll take it to the FBI, and I'll show them.
Do you think they're really going to take your call?
It's an injustice to the man's name.
Well, considering his crimes against those young boys, who is really gonna care?
I thought you believed him, too.
I wanted to believe him. I did believe him. I acted on that belief.
Upset, Scully avoids his eyes.
Why don't you just tell me what he said to you?
She struggles with her emotions, then shakes her head. He studies her, then turns away. He pins the article about the Frankenstein doctor, with a photo of Drummy making the arrest, next to the I Want to Believe poster, with a UFO on it.
He told me, don't give up. And I didn't. And it saved your life. But I've put that boy through hell. And I have another surgery scheduled for this morning. Because I believed that God was telling me to. Through a pedophile priest, no less.
What if Father Joe's prayers were answered after all? What if he were forgiven? Because he didn't give up.
She closes her eyes, trying to reconcile her conflicting beliefs and emotions.
Try proving that one, Mulder. I'm due at the hospital.
He frowns as she walks out. As she approaches her car, he comes out onto the porch.
Scully? Why would he say that? Don't give up. Why would he say such a thing to you?
I think that was clearly meant for you, Mulder.
He didn't say it to me. He said it to you.
Oh.
If Father Joe were the devil, why would he say the opposite of what the devil might say? Maybe that's the answer. Or the larger answer. Don't give up.
They look into each other's eyes, hers brimming with tears.
Please don't make this any harder than it already is.
Okay. If you have any doubts at all, just call off that surgery this morning. And then we'll get out of here. Just me and you.
As far away from the darkness as we can get.
I'm not sure it works that way. I think maybe the darkness finds you and me. Let it try.
He grins. She smiles through her tears, and they kiss long and lovingly. They hold each other, then she breaks away and gets into the car. At the hospital, she walks down a busy corridor studying a folder of notes. She glances at another woman in a white coat who eyeballs her aggressively, then approaches Father Ibarra, who's talking to the Pherons. They stare at her as she walks past them and up a flight of stairs. In the busy operating room, Christian is again made ready for the procedure. Scrubbed and ready, she approaches her patient. A colleague stares at her.
Are you ready to begin, Dr. Scully?
She looks around at the expressionless faces of her colleagues. A group of nuns gathers at the glass door of the operating room. Scully looks at them nervously, then steadies herself.
Yes.
She smiles confidently at Christian. In memory of Randy Stone. Light reflects off a dark liquid, which then gets washed away. Directed by Chris Carter. Written and produced by Frank Spotnitz and Chris Carter. Executive producer, Brent O'Connor. Director of Photography, Bill Rowe, ASC. Production designer, Mark Freeborn. Film editor, Richard A. Harris. Music composed by Mark Snow. Costume designer, Lisa Tomchesson. Casting by Mindy Marin, CSA, Kareem Mayers, CSA, and Heike Brandstatter, CSA. David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson, Amanda Peet, Billy Connolly, Alvin Exhibit Joyner, Mitch Pileggi, Callum Keith Rennie, Adam Godley, and Nikki Acock. Starring David Duchovny as Fox Mulder, Gillian Anderson as Dana Scully, Amanda Peet as ASAC Dakota Whitney, Billy Connolly as Father Joseph Chrisman, Alvin Exhibit Joyner as Agent Mosley Drummy, Mitch Pileggi as Walter Skinner, Callum Keith Rennie as Second Abductor Yanka Dakshin, Adam Godley as Father Ibarra, Alex Diakon as Gaunt Man, Nikki Acock as Second Victim Cheryl Cunningham. Fagin Woodcock as First Abductor Franz Tomchesson, Marco Nicoli as Christian Fearon, Carrie Rozhensky as Margaret Fearon, Spencer Mabee as Blair Fearon, Veronica Hadrava as Female Assistant, Denis Krasnogolov as Male Assistant, Patrick Keating as Slight Man, Roger Horchow as Elderly Gent, Stephen E. Miller as Feed Store Proprietor, Xantha Radley as Monica Bannon, Lorena Gale as On-Screen Doctor, Donovan Stinson as Suited Man, Dion Johnston as First Cop, Sarah Jane Redmond as Special Agent in Charge, Christina Dalimonte as Doctor's Colleague. Vanessa Tomasino as Hallway Agent, Luvia Peterson as OR Nurse, Babs Chula as Surgeon, Marcy T. House as Sheriff, J.P. Finn as Whispering Priest, Beth Siegler as Anesthesiologist, Stacey Copeland as Doctor, Tom Charon as Sheriff Horton, Brent C.S. O'Connor as Tow Truck Driver. The producers wish to thank the following for their assistance: City of Vancouver, City of Pemberton, Lil Watt Nation, Dr. Seth G. Spotnitz, M.D., The Jeffersons, licensed by Sony Pictures Television. Copyright 2008, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and June Entertainment 3 LLC in all countries except Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. Copyright 2008, TCF Hungary Film Rights Exploitation Limited Liability Company, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation, and June Entertainment 3 LLC in Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. 20th Century Fox Film Corporation is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. The events, characters, and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual events or firms, is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Further titles continue to scroll over changing terrain, from snow to rain, over sea, forest, then over more sea, and towards a small sun-drenched island. Two figures row in a small boat towards the island. He's wearing shorts, and she a bikini with an open wrap exposing her trim figure. It's Mulder and Scully. Audio description by Deluxe. Written and voiced by Roland Behan. The end.